This is Radio EcoShock with Alex Smith.
Who cares about another pipeline in northern Canada? When it threatens to pump dirty tar sands oil to China and the world, everyone needs to know. Those who know best are the native people living close to the biggest source of industrial pollution on the planet, and those depending on the thousand streams risking poison from the Northern Gateway Pipeline, from Alberta through British Columbia to the pristine Great Bear Rainforest and the coast. First Nations women are taking the lead in speaking up for their communities and the future. If the tar sands power Asia and America, climate catastrophe is assured. We can't let that happen. Now you will hear First Nations speakers recorded September 21st in Vancouver. A UK activist also reports on the international campaign to stop tar sands madness. I'm Alex Smith. There's not much more I can say. Our future and our children are at stake. You know that.
Next up, I'm delighted to invite up Ariel Duranger. Ariel is a Dene from the Athabasca Chipewyan First Nation of Northern Alberta. She's currently the communications coordinator for the Athabasca Chipewyan First Nation, who have recently filed a suit against oil giant Shell Oil Canada. And Ariel comes from a fierce family, including her mom, Suzanne Duranger, who many of us know. So thank you again, Ariel.
Thank you, Matsi Chiro.
First off, I just want to say thank you for everyone that put on this event, and thank you for Melina speaking and giving the context to what the tar sands really is and just how big the tentacles and the beast that tar sands really is and how far it stretches and what it can and does do to many, many Indigenous communities within its path. My community, the Athabasca Chipewyan First Nation, we are Dene people. We belong to the Athabasca region in northern Alberta. Our people extend into the Northwest Territories. The Dene people are strong people. Woo! We have lineage. Our lineage goes all the way to Alaska, and our cousins, the Navajo, are the Dene down in the south. So we are a strong line of people, and we are people with strong women. My grandmother was the backbone of our family. She had 19 children. And she raised them all. She taught them about the land. My grandfather was a trapper. My mother is a strong warrior woman who taught me how to stand up for my rights. And it's the women that hold our communities together and prop our people up. So just to give you a little bit of context, Indigenous people and the Athabasca tar sands. Indigenous people have a strong culture that's intertwined with nature, with the wilderness around us, with the animals, with the water, with the air, with the grandmother moon, the grandfather sun, Mother Earth. We are interconnected with all of it. We depend on it. It is us and we are them. And then we have the tar sands. The tar sands is counterintuitive to who we are as Indigenous people. It destroys the land, it poisons the air, it poisons the water, it kills the animals. It is counterproductive to who we are as Indigenous people. We are at odds with something so close to where we are. If you look at this picture at the bottom, on one side you see our traditional territory still intact. And that picture really depicts the struggle that our people are really in, because on the opposite side we see full-scale development. Those bodies of water that are in little squares, that's toxic tailings. That river system that goes through, that river system is the Athabasca River. That is the heart of our community. That is the life of our community. Our people rely on it. And that destruction is right there beside it. Those tailings ponds are leaching into that river system and ultimately killing our community. So just to give you context of where my community is in correlation to this development, we have down here at the very bottom, that picture you saw, you can see it from outer space. The tailings ponds are so big. That little blotch, it's actually quite a bit bigger because I think this picture is from 2006. I think now it's probably double that size. That line going through is the Athabasca River, the heart of our community. And if you keep going up, the community of Fort Chipewyan is where the people of the Athabasca Chipewyan First Nation live, along with the Mikisew Cree Nation, a Métis settlement, and a non-Indigenous settlement. And we sit in the mouth of Lake Athabasca, which is the heart of our communities. Fort Chippewyan is a fly-in-only community, or you can take the river system, which is getting harder and harder to navigate because of how much water they're using for the production of tar sands. So our community is small, about 1,100, 1,000 people, and what happens in our community and what happens to the individuals in the community affects all of us. So our people, like I said, it's a quite diversity of people in the community. We rely on the plants and the medicines that are found in and around our community. Everyone there knows where you can pick berries, where you can find the medicines, where you dig the rat root, where you pick the berries in the springtime, the best places to go fishing. Most of these people are trappers, hunters, fishermen. And the culture and the identity of who they are still thrives in the community. They don't even see it as culture and identity. They see it as just living and being who you are. Until 20 years ago, some people say it's as early as 15 years ago, the community was 80% subsistence, meaning the food that they put on the table, the way that they survived was from the land, because we are the land. As Dene Sulin people, we say that we are the land. This is Indian land. That's what we say. When the industry comes up there, we say, this isn't your land. This isn't government's land. This is our land. This is our traditional territory. If you want to do something up here in our land, you need to consult with us and you need to get our permission. You know, Clayton, my good friend Clayton Thomas Mueller once said, going up in Fort Chip, it really is like God's country, because it is. It's so beautiful. You can't imagine anything more beautiful than what it's like up there. I might have to argue with some of you guys that live in BC. It's beautiful here. But being in an isolated northern community is absolutely incredible. The culture there is strong. Like I said, we don't see it as like something different. If you ask people, what's the cultural identity like up here? They're like, what do you mean? Because they don't see it as a separate entity from who we are. So Canada's tar sands. It's the third largest oil deposits after Saudi Arabia. And right now the surface mining is what dominates my people's traditional territory and accounts for about 20% of the oil that currently covers about 550 square kilometers. Currently, there are over 30 companies that are active in the tar sands. This is what an in-situ pad looks like, something the Alberta government calls innocuous or environmentally. It has entirely benign environmental impacts. This is the open pit mines. Keep in mind, this is all within my people's traditional territory, the territories that we have used for thousands of years to sustain our people. And so, Shell. Who is Shell? Shell is one of the largest operators in the tar sands right now. They currently have they have about 5 different projects in the Athabasca region, and they also have projects in Molina in the Peace River region. They also have projects in Crystal from the Beaver Lake in the Cold Lake region. They are one of the huge conglomerates, and they feel as though they can do no wrong, because how could they? They also have international projects. They are one of the largest oil and gas companies in the world, and I've had the opportunity to go and speak to shareholders in other countries. And so just to give you an idea, so they have a joint project that Shell is 60% owned, and they currently are producing about 255,000 barrels per day, and they want to propose 2 new projects. These 2 new projects, the Jackpine Mine expansion, is currently right on top of our traditional territories and would produce an additional 100,000. And the Pierre River mine would be 27 kilometers from the perimeter of our reserve. So ACFN, or Athabasca Chipewyan First Nation, you know, we finally said enough is enough. We have hundreds of applications coming before our community saying, here, look at this proposal, look at this proposal. Tell us what you think, but you only have a deadline of 30 days. And if you don't get back to us in 30 days, you're basically giving us your consent. That's exactly how consultation happens in Alberta. So what happens? Our people get bullied into deals because the projects, the bulldozers are moving, the applications are through, government says, oh, they told you about it. So our people take what are called impact benefit agreements. They're basically piecemeal offerings from industry and from government to try and appease us. And our past leadership made impact benefit agreements with Shell for 2 of their current operations to try and compensate us for our losses. And part of that is we said, okay, you want to compensate us for our losses? We want a place at the table with you. We want to know exactly what you're doing, how you're doing it. We want to build your mitigation. We want to build your environmental standards. And they said, okay, but guess what? Shell has reneged on their responsibilities and they haven't lived up to that agreement. So we said, okay, that's how you want to play? We're going to sue you. So what are we doing? We're drawing a line in the tar sands or in the sand. And we're taking a strong stand now. We're saying enough is enough. There's too much rapid development in our traditional territory. And we can't survive without our land. We're saying our treaty rights, our rights to the land, our rights to our culture and our identity as who we are constitutionally protected rights take paramount over economic development. ACFN wants no further development by Shell or any other industry until the broader impacts of development and how they affect our rights. How they're going to actually ever mitigate them. Will they ever be able to mitigate them? Because current practices look at the environmental standards as if it's a separate entity. But as Indigenous people, as Dene Sulin people, we are not separate from them. So how can you measure that? How can industry and government come in and say, well, we've decided that in order to mitigate this project, we need to build you a compensation lake. I'm not even joking about this, guys. They have said to us, we're going to mitigate our practices because, yes, granted, we're going to take a bunch of water. We're going to destroy some fishing beds and some traditional territory along the Athabasca River. But don't worry. We're going to take a bunch of water from the Athabasca River, which you use as a navigable river system. We're going to put it into a big hole, and we're going to call it Compensation Lake so you guys can still have your fishing rights. I'm not even joking. This isn't the first time they've tried it. This is the second time. The first time, it failed, and they somehow think that this isn't. They're going to propose it again, and that's going to appease us. The whole point is right now, Alberta, industry, they don't know how to even look at our rights. They don't understand our rights. They don't understand what it means to have treaty and cultural rights. What is traditional ecological knowledge? How do we utilize it? How do we move forward? How do we protect it? And they're doing nothing to address it. They say, okay, well, why don't you just tell us what it is? And we say, we can tell you. But how are you going to address it? How are you going to fix it? How are you going to ensure that this isn't going to continue to happen? And they say, well, if you just tell us, we'll do it. Our people are saying, no. You want to fix it? You want to address it? You need to sit down at the table. You need to learn what it means to be Indigenous. You need to understand traditional ecological knowledge. You need to get back to where we come from. So, we've sued Shell. They have these two new projects, the Jack Pine Mine and the Pear River. And the Jack Pine Mine is coming up. It's coming up next month, end of October. It'll happen in Fort McMurray. Starting on October 23rd, ACFN is going to put forward, for the very first time, a constitutional challenge to try and halt the approval of an application in the tar sands. We're gonna basically fight them tooth and nail. We're going to say, sorry, government, sorry, industry, enough is enough. The status quo of the approval rates has to stop. You can no longer do this piecemeal, pity consultation with our people. You need to understand who we are. We need to be sitting down with you side by side because we are nations. And we have nation-to-nation agreements with the government. And you need to respect who we are. And until such time, it's not going to happen. So, how does that come back to BC? I know I've got like probably 1 minute left. If we continue to allow the expansion and the development in the tar sands, they are going to come up with different routes and different ways to get it to the coast of BC, to the coast of the Arctic, to wherever they need to go. If we don't stop the expansion at the very heart of where it is, where my people come from, and I'm telling you, it hasn't been an easy battle. My people suffer. We have cancers, some of the highest rates of cancers in Alberta, 30% higher than the rest of the province. We have autoimmune diseases. We have elevating rates of diabetes because our ability to practice our traditional diets has been basically taken away from us. Our people are dying. My cousin calls it slow industrial genocide is happening to our people. And we have to stop it. But in order to stop it, we need you on this side stopping the pipelines. But we need you to support us stopping the expansion in the heart of the tar sands. And you can. So please, like, you have the ability until October 1st, you can send a letter to Shell and to the JRP, the Joint Review Panel, reviewing Shell's application at the stopshellnow.com. And you can just do it right online, and you can just say, you know, hell no, Shell, go to hell, whatever you want to say. Or you can say, I stand with the Athabasca Chipewyan First Nation. You need to do proper consultation with First Nations. We want to inundate them with as many comments and supporters from across the country, from across Turtle Island, from across Mother Earth. So please, I implore you all to stand with our people as we take on one of the largest multinational oil companies in the world. Masichiro.
That was Ariel Desrangers, Communications Director of the Athabasca Chipewyan First Nations, neighbors and victims to the monstrous tar sands operations in the north of Alberta, Canada. She was recorded at the event She Speaks, Indigenous Women Speak Out Against the Tar Sands, recorded in Vancouver on September 21st by the Red Eye Collective at CFRO Co-op Radio. This is Radio EcoShock with a special on the Canadian tar sands and the fight against the Northern Gateway Pipeline proposal that endangers the northern wilderness and the Wild West Coast. Coming up, a report on tar sands resistance in the United Kingdom and child activist and singer Takiyah Blaney. First, Frida Hewson of the Wet'suwet'en Nation about a resistance camp built to protect the land from the Northern Gateway Pipeline.
Frida is the spokesperson of the Unist'ot'en clan of the Wet'suwet'en Nation, who oppose all pipelines and all mining projects in their territory. The Unist'ot'en have built a resistance camp to protect the land from the Northern Gateway, the Kitimat Summit Lake Looping Project, Pacific Trails Pipeline, Pembina, and Kinder Morgan proposed pipelines. Everyone, please, an incredibly warm welcome to Frida.
First of all, I just like the territory holders of this territory I'm standing on. I just thank you for welcoming me on your territory. To me, this is like really personal. The reason why I do this is I grew up on my territory. My grandma taught my mom. My great-grandmother lived to be 113 years old, and she lived off the land, outlived all her children. So she taught her grandchildren how to take care of the land, how to live off the land, and said it was for important to them to teach us. And my mom has taught me how to live off the land. When a teacher would ask, what did you do for your summer holidays? You'd hear PNE, went to Edmonton. And when it came to me, I would be talking about the territories. I went fishing. I went hunting. I went picking berries. That was my summer holidays, and I'm so thankful for it. Because if I didn't have those summer holidays, I wouldn't be standing here saying we're defending our lands. I come from the Hunastat'en people. You probably hear that a lot in the media because you say it's the Hunastat'en that are fighting industry. They call us the people of the headwaters because we protect the headwaters, the very headwaters that are being impacted by industry now. It's the Buckley and the Skeena River. Like the Morris River flows into the Buckley and then into the Skeena. The grandma I was talking about had the name Nedibis, which now my uncle holds. My uncle Warner, he heeded my grandma's words and constructed two trapline cabins on the shore of Morris River. And it was shamelessly burned to the ground by Canfor Logging Company. Our lessons learned. It's a snapshot of the Hunastat'en's Yinta. It's our territories, taken only a few years ago. Take note of the extremely high degree of deforestation. You see all the bald spots? Those are clear cut. That impacts ours. Ability to go pick berries, hunt, pick our traditional medicines. And just recently, we drove And for 36 kilometers, it's all clear cut. And coincidentally, it's in a route of the pipeline. Time for change. It's awakening for my clan. On October 5th, 2009, we attended an all clans gathering in my community. Five clans of the Wet'suwet'en Nation unanimously opted out of the BC treaty process. A decision was made to begin asserting our rights, rights we've never given up. We've never ceded or surrendered our land, and it's our responsibility to take care of that land. From that meeting, my clan designated me as their spokesperson to deal with industry, anybody coming onto our lands. I'm responsible to relay the message back to my chiefs and my membership on what industry is proposing and relaying the message back on what my chiefs and membership say. Whether it's no, and most of the time it is no, we don't agree to any industry. It's a new beginning. Accountability, responsibility, and respect for our lands. On March 29th in 2010, we sent out a media release informing public, government, and industry. Unistaten is a sovereign and independent of the Office of Wet'suwet'en. OW is no longer has 22,000 kilometers to negotiate. After we declared that in the spring, myself and Togastai, my fiancé, were going out to check on one of our territories. It's called Poplar Lake, Takatothlin. We had the snowmobile in the back of our truck. We thought we were going to come in, park the truck and snowmobile into the rest of the way into the cabin. But when we came to the spot where we were supposed to snowmobile in, the road was plowed. So I looked over and I said, "What's going on here? Somebody's in here." And he looked right away and said, "Mining." So we drove all the way into my cabin, and when we reached the cabin site, we just said, "We'll leave the truck right on the road, so whoever's in there is going to have to honk when they come back out." Sure enough, the next morning, heard a horn honking, so we got up and just went quickly to the road. Asked the gentleman that got out of the truck and come over, I asked, "Who are you and what are you doing here?" And he said he came from, he was working for an exploration company, and he's the owner of a company that's setting up a camp. And I just said, "You never spoke to my clan. I've never heard of you. You guys don't have any business in here. It's considered trespass." So we let him leave. I took his card and let him go. And he said he still had people back at where they were setting up the camp. So after he left, Togastai and I drove over to the site where they were trying to set up the camp. And I went over and spoke to those two workers that had left there and said the exact same thing to him, that they didn't have permission to be there, that they shouldn't be there. And just before I left, I told those workers, "Everything you have here, you're trespassing. You don't have our permission to be here. So if you don't have everything out of here by Friday, 12 noon, everything you have here belongs to my clan." So after we left there, I decided I needed to go home right away and report to my chiefs what we came upon. And they thought it was important that they wanted to go out and see it for themselves. So they all went out, checked for themselves, and said the exact same thing as I told them, that they had to be out of there by Friday. And as you see, there was mostly women. It was women and children that did the blockade, because we blocked the road to make sure no other equipment or anything else went in. So we did a blockade along with a couple of our spouses that stood by us. We put up signs. And by Friday, 12 noon, they had everything loaded up, and the women followed them out. And shortly after, because of that blockade, somebody burnt down our cabin. So on May 29, 2010, we put out a media release, and the message read, "The Unistaten will not be swayed from protecting our territory from industry or government." From that point, we decided we wanted to start setting up camps. But before that, I need to mention that the Morris River, the one I said I gave an explanation of, we were the people of the headwaters. They're proposing several pipelines through that territory. One of them is PTP, that's natural gas, and Enbridge, Kinder Morgan. I think there's two others, I can't remember them right now, but right now we're battling PTP.
Radio EcoShock.
At first, most of our focus was on Enbridge, but while we were spending so much time focusing on Enbridge, we didn't realize that Pacific Trails Petroleum had already got all their permits in place and already have permission to go ahead with a gas line pipeline through our territory, the exact same route as Enbridge. And when they first came around, they went to our chiefs, and a land use study had been done, and 100% of our chiefs, the Wet'suwet'en chief, said no to the PTP project. So what did PTP go and do? They turned around and went to Aboriginal bands, the band chiefs, and they went to Carrigsakani Tribal Council. It's a tribal office that all these bands operate under. So they went to these people and got an agreement signed. So they say they have 16 out of the 17 Aboriginal people in agreement with their project. So we heard they were having a meeting in Prince George, a contractors meeting they called. They were going to offer contracts to the Aboriginal contractors. I found out about this Thursday evening and decided I was going to take a day off work Friday. Togustin and I jumped in our car, probably 5-6 o'clock in the morning, drove all the way to Prince George, and we went to this contractors meeting, sat there. Togustin kept putting up his hand, and the people keep looking and just ignoring us, just kept bypassing us. And finally, we just stood up, and I said the very same thing that 100%, I said, 50% of your pipeline is on Wet'suwet'en territory. The Wet'suwet'en chiefs 100% said no to your project. And you turned around and went to band offices to try and say you've got consent from the Aboriginal people. And I said the Del Gamu Kastewe court case did not say band office. It did not say tribal council. It said the hereditary chief name and their house members. I said, I am here on behalf of my chief, Nettie Beast, and I am the house member. And we said no to your project. You will not step foot on our territory. And from all these pipelines trying to threaten our territory, we started having an annual action camp. We started the first one July 14th, 2010. And we had several sponsors, and then IEN was one of our sponsors, Greenpeace, Council of Canadians. We had several different sponsors, and the first camp we had about 60 people come up, and they came from everywhere. The States, Minnesota, Chicago, Toronto, Saskatchewan, Alberta. And during this camp, we did a march down Smithers, and we stopped at every ministry office that's been giving out permits on our territory. And we marched down Main Street, stopped in front of Royal Bank for the purpose that they were supporting the tar sands.
That was Frieda Houston of the Wet'suwet'en Nation on First Nations activism to prevent another leaky Enbridge pipeline across northern British Columbia. We'll be back in just a minute with UK tar sands activist Suzanne Dhaliwal and 11-year-old Takaya Blaney as Radio EcoShock continues.